Is it Piece of Chain or Tao Te Ching?
It's the Arrow Wong podcast series.
The number one Apple business and number four entrepreneurship podcast.
Speaking from Hong Kong.
Real Fan is the CEO and co-founder of U Campus. It has worked with all parts of the education spectrum, universities, consumers, business, and governments. New Campus is a modern business school looking to upskill business and their people for 1% course of an MBA. 80% of their learners are women, 60% of their instructors are too, representing 25 countries. Will is also a member at the Forbes Business Council, sharing insights on the intersection between the future of work and learning with an Asian twist. Without further ado, let's explore the modern business school built for the modern workforce with Will Fan. Hey, Will, thanks for being on our show.
Thanks, Sarah. Really excited to be here.
Yeah. To kick off this session, can you tell us a little bit about your background? How do you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, that's a long story. But just a bit about me. I'm originally from Australia, born and raised from an immigrant family. First go to university. And so, you know, like a lot of good Asian kids, I did everything right. I went to study at a good school. I went to study board uni. And then I found my first career in consulting. But I think, you know, in the context of, you know, finding my why, you know, after a few years, I did ask myself, you know, is this what gives me joy? Is this what gives me drive? I was had a entrepreneurial streak. My parents and my uncles and aunties all ran small shops and butcheries and real estate agencies. And, you know, it was really important for me to venture into something a bit more creative and something that had a lot more impact. And so the first business that I built was actually in furniture, buying and selling vintage pieces. And that actually then helped me, you know, really look into the technology startup space. And from a furniture business, you know, that then transitioned into how can I help people who were unsatisfied and unfulfilled in their corporate careers switch careers or explore new careers and redevelop themselves and upskill themselves. And that essentially became the predecessor to New Campus, a platform that helped people try new careers. We did that we sold that platform as a service to over 40 universities in China, in Southeast Asia, in the Middle East. And then come 2019, we saw the big opportunity to launch our own Challenger University, which is where we are now. And I think what's been incredibly exciting is looking at a lot of my work and my journey has really been trying to solve the same problem that I had 5, 10, 15 years, which is how can I help reinvent myself? And therefore, how do I help reinvent others, especially as we go into a volatile, uncertain, chaotic world?
Got it. You kind of answer my design question, because I want to ask you about the why of the new campus, but you just answered it. It is to help reinvent others by reinventing yourself.
I think there's a lot of whys in the work that I do. And it's not just myself, it's a team as well, right? I think there's always an intrinsic value when it comes to working in the education space. You know, in our case, it's a future, it's an intersection between the future of work and learning. But, you know, as I've evolved as an entrepreneur and I've kind of grown up a bit over time, it actually becomes less about me. It goes more into how do I empower others to be better leaders? How can better leaders build better companies? And how do these companies solve some of the most challenging problems in the world? Because as we all know, that there are a lot of problems in the world right now. And so, you know, over time, my why has evolved from being less about, you know, supporting my own self-actualization, but how do I, you know, really equip business leaders with the right capability, the right mindset, the right skill set to, you know, go forward and again be the next version of themselves.
Got it. The thing that I really want to have you on the show is I got the buy-in by the program that provided by New Campus regarding how you provide the leadership to sort of the modern students, because from my perspective, I really think you can really put leadership into practice to actually doing something, not just listening to theory. And then but that's the part that I will get into later because I want to know more about it. And the program that you design is put people into an actual environment can experience that. So yeah, that's the reason why I want to have you on the show. So, okay, let's move on with this question. Can you elaborate on the following description? New Campus is a lifelong learning school for people excited by change. We are a gym membership for learning experiences with daily classes hosted at a network of accessible co-learning spaces. Members learn together from global entrepreneurs and experts about emerging business, technology and cultural trends, and consistently building the skills they need to thrive in the changing world. We are a team of 10 passionate individuals from Australia, the United States, Singapore, China, India, and Philippines. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so much I think it is. And you know, even that description is slightly outdated because the world has changed so rapidly. And that kind of becomes the crux of what we do at New Campus, because, you know, if you look at traditional education or learning methods, you know, you can no longer expect to go to school for 4 years or go to university for 3 years and expect to be equipped for the rest of your life. And especially with the pandemic, it's really accelerated change in the way that we work, the way that we live, the way that we think about personal, professional growth. And so at New Campus, you know, we have, you know, a few key things that we look at. One is, how do you build, you know, growth mindset into an individual, you know, especially when a time that is so challenging, so uncertain, how can you, you know, empower people to equip them with the right mindset, the right skills to navigate, you know, uncharted waters. The second is, at the end of the day, you know, we are driven by the people and the network around us. I mean, right now, my partner is doing a session around, you know, how to find a network in this modern age. And so you're looking at, you know, equipping people with the right access to mentors, to teachers, to people who want to pay it forward that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to connect to. And I think that's incredibly exciting in a post-pandemic world, because you know, we're able to connect with, you know, folks in the US, in Europe, in, you know, the Middle East overnight, through a LinkedIn chat, through a, you know, quick Zoom call. And I think the final piece is, the modern organization has changed. We were a completely distributed team in 2015 with our previous business, and a lot of investors, a lot of potential hires, a lot of even our team members, you know, were questioning, is this the right way to do it? You know, should we be, you know, building culture in one location first and doing that right? But, you know, now we live in this hybrid environment where you can be working from home, connecting to your development team in India, your sales team in Australia, your CX team in Malaysia. And so, you know, when you think of the modern organization, it really does encompass those three key pieces, right? The mindset of having, you know, the option to have, you know, to be able to navigate uncharted waters. The second is, you know, continuously exposing yourself to new mentors, peers, a new network. And then the third is the changing environment in the way that we work.
Got it. So basically a decentralized school system that to provide a gateway and access to the students to not just a platform to enable them to learning on the fly. It is like the technical, because I have a programmer background. And then there's a thing that we call DAO right now, decentralized autonomous organization. Clearly, you are going into that direction to decentralize everything so that people can, students can iterate with the resources you provide on this platform. Cool. So I'm not sure if I found this information online, it is outdated. Please correct me if I were wrong. Do I miss any value proposition of New Campus as the modern business school? The first one is upskill business and their people for 1% cost of an MBA. That's the number one thing that I really want to have on the course, because MBA is crazily expensive and he can help a lot of people if it is true. And second of all, 80% of New Campus learners are women. 60% of our instructors are two, representing 25 countries. This is another big reason why I want to have you on the show is I believe in inclusivity and diversity. And students can really learn in this environment because they can explore a lot of different culture. And the third point is New Campus has worked with all parts of the education spectrum, universities, consumers, business, and government. Do I miss anything, or correct me if I were wrong?
Yeah, I think if you wanted to unpack those three points, Aero, and I'll work backwards. Building an education company is really hard.
Yeah, totally agree.
it's very hard.
You know what? Can I tell you something? I always want to do this a decade ago, but I just realized it is so freaking hard. Why do I put myself in a so difficult position? So I just forget about that. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's hard because, a few things. One is, you need to essentially look at the entire spectrum of, stakeholders involved. The end learner needs to respect and aspire to, be part of your community and brand. The buyer, whether it's a parent or a corporate or a sponsor, needs to buy into your values, your pedagogy, your vision. The enterprise that person probably works for needs to align with the skill sets that you teach. The government and the region needs to understand the policy in place and the macro forces in place. And so over the past half a decade, we have, gotten a lot of exposure and made a lot of mistakes in understanding why, it's not selling diapers. There's no, just one problem that you solve. It's not e-commerce where you have a buyer and then you have a product and you just, focus on logistics. It's everything on top of that. And so, at New Campus, we have done a lot of work with government to help influence policy. And we're doing this in Europe, in Singapore, in the Middle East. And that's really changing the way that, top-down approach looks at accessibility in education. At the enterprise level, we work with hypergrowth scale-ups in Asia that are going through such transformational change. And for the first time, you have this young rising class of first-time managers that need the skill set, that need the capability to be able to lead others and, be empathetic, empathetic business leaders. And I think the third part around the end learner, it is how do you design learning experiences that are inclusive and accessible in a remote hybrid environment? And I think this is why we've been able to attract, such a high portion in women learners, because we do see, the underserved nature of learning experiences. We've been able to create and cultivate such a safe environment, which we're incredibly proud of. If you actually compare that to your traditional business school, they might be hovering around 40-45% women, but their faculty of instructors is significantly lower. And so if we're building a business school in Asia, we're actually looking at a few things. How do you find leaders and mentors and instructors that our women leaders and our women learners can aspire to? But then secondly, how do you create a learning environment that feels safe for them to experiment, try and test new things? And then the third part is, back to your first point is we want to provide people in business or people who want to be in business with accessible learning. And if you look at the MBA, it is the most exclusive prized commodity in the world, only 8,000 spots in the world. But we believe that it's not about increasing 8,000 to 80,000 or 800,000. It's how do we serve the 99% of people that haven't thought about doing an MBA with elements, content, and curriculum that are still important for their growth and development. And so, you know, in combining those three points, we look at how do you build accessible, inclusive learning, but also empower others at the entire end-to-end of that spectrum to make that decision easier and make it more inclusive in that sense.
Got it. So you are not just serving the students who already has the mindset that I'm ready to upskill myself, but you are actually inspiring the people who doesn't have those kind of mindset yet. So you're educating this group of people too.
Yeah, so one analogy would be, if you're thinking about going to Harvard, if you're thinking about going to Stanford, if you're thinking about going to INSEAD, you already have a certain persona and you know level of tenacity and you know aspiration to level up your career. And and we're not necessarily serving that audience because there's other sort of challenger business schools that are increasing that volume. But for us, it is really looking at those that still need business education. And that's which is why we work with hyper growth scale-ups in Asia, because you know, as you grow from a team of 50 to 500 to 2,000, you're moving from a young product manager, product analyst to managing a team of five, managing a team of 15, managing a team of managers and managers of 30. And so these skills are so incredibly important for a business to be sustainable, for a business to be able to, you know, attract the next generation of talent. But if you actually look at the traditional incumbents and what they currently look at, it's just too expensive. It's too inaccessible. And the quality is often opaque.
Got it. It's nice that you just mentioned the new manager, those kinds of things, because one, actually the time that New Campus captured my attention is your course, Manager Essential Sprints. But that's just one of the programs that you provided. We'll dive into that later. I want to ask you a big picture question first. You always work with enterprise like communicate with government, educational institution. You are a co-founder and you have the responsibility of a sales. You sell the dream and vision of New Campus. Can you tell us what is the dream and what is the vision when you are trying to get buy-in from these people?
So for us, I believe that education should be accessible, it should be equitable, it should be inclusive. But the thesis in how it applies to the rest of the world is that if you could build better business leaders, these leaders should be able to build better businesses, and in building better businesses, they should be able to solve some of the hardest problems in the world. Where we play in that narrative is upskilling people in hyper growth companies in the Asia region. And I think that's just the starting point for us. I think over time, you know, as our curriculum evolves, as the market matures, as our brand becomes more well known, we actually do see ourselves building a new university. You know, we're in the process of acquiring a university license now, which I'm, you know, incredibly excited about, but you wouldn't have been able to do 2 years ago. Why would you trust a new university? But in today's day and age, would you still pay $200,000 to do a Zoom degree? No. One comparable that I like to make with new campus and the edtech space in general is, think of fintech companies half a decade ago. Fintech companies acquiring banking licenses because they built experiences that are just better for the end user. Fintech companies that are becoming neobanks that are more inclusive, accessible, relevant, especially to scattered, fragmented markets like Southeast Asia. I see New Campus being that next version of a challenger school. And for us, the focus area is business education. We're not helping develop new coders. We're not building digital marketers. We focus on the softer side. And I do think that the softer skills are incredibly important to uplift organizations as they go through, you know, rapid change in the next 24, 48 months.
Got it. You just set the stage for the entire new campus. So in this new campus, this university, I'm in one of the building of business school. There's a program called Manager Essential Spring. Who are these new manager and who isn't the intended audience for this program? Can you talk about that?
So the average person becomes a manager when they're 30 years old. But the average age that they get any sort of formal training is 43 years old. So about a full decade, you have the blind leading the blind. And in Asia, first-time manager is even younger, especially with, you know, booming industries like e-commerce, supply chain logistics, fintech. And so what we've seen, as we work with your big tech companies like your Grabs, your Carousels, your Gojeks, is you have this rising class of young leaders that are leading for the first time. I mean, they might be great to execute as individual contributors, but when it comes down to leveling up their team management skill set, the cross-cultural nuances, the emotional intelligence, that's where we see a very big gap. Because traditional institutions, think of your local trainers or your universities, are just too expensive and too inaccessible. And so how do you build content curriculum that is impactful, effective, and relevant? But how do you deliver in a way that is accessible by price, by learning experience, and by communities? So, you know, that's where we see the manager sprint being very an entry point to starting to level up these businesses and the business leaders under it.
Got it. So whoever has the goals to become a manager, not as an individual contributor, I should take this course, am I correct?
I think eventually our curriculum is going to evolve to other skill sets. And, you know, whether it's landing feedback to emotional intelligence, to doing 101s, to managing upstream, managing downstream. I do think that there's a lot of nuances and insights that we've collected over time. And especially when we work with industry leaders from fintech, from e-commerce, the big tech companies like your Salesforces, your Xiaomi's, your Netflix, there's so much collected learning that you can compartmentalize, turn into, you know, great pathways for people to explore. Because again, our thesis is that you can't have academia teaching the future business practice when the future business practice is evolving every day.
Yeah. Totally.
And I think that's, the innovation that we're seeing in education now, having the accessibility and having the technology platforms like Zoom, like Amazon Chime, like Microsoft Teams, it just allows you to have more cohesive conversations that then you could apply back to your day to day.
I like your answer. The reason why I like it is, when I'm asking the question, I was trying to cementing those different kinds of people, but maybe sometimes even the individual contributor, you don't have a personal goal to become a managerial type of people. You still have to learn this kind of skills, because even though maybe as a top programmer, sometimes a top programmer can be 10x like the other average programmer. Does it mean you are just an individual contributor? You don't have to learn the perspective from the other side so that you can provide better feedback to your manager. So yeah, I just like your answer because it reflects the reality that the landscape is always evolving. Let's dive deep into the manager essential sprint. This is a cohort comprises up to 20 students. How does everyone match with the accountability partner? How exactly does the accountability partner hold each other accountable? Can you share with us some example what specific action the partner hold each other accountable or a project? Yeah.
So we've gone through three waves of edtech innovation in the history of edtech. The first is your LMS solutions that supported traditional learning. So your Blackboards, your Moodles. Mm. Your second wave is the content platforms, your content players, your Udacities, your Courseras, even YouTube, you know, is the largest database of, you know, learning content in the world. But I do think the new wave of education platforms and innovation providers is a hybrid. And so for us, you know, where we actually see UCampus shining in the, you know, modern century is having that cohort-based experience where you can learn from others, but also get exposure to a global network of peers, instructors, communities, and then content off the back of that. The way that our program works, it's a two-month cohort sprint. It's an intimate group where you learn, you know, through workshops taught by industry leaders. But there's also weekly challenges that you get to apply back to your work. That's incredibly important because if you look at the second generation of edtech platforms, it's all about the certification, the completion rates. But where we actually see the importance, especially with our hypergrowth companies, it's not about Aero or Will completing a course. It's how can he or she apply that back to what they're doing in their day to day. So something as simple as how can I have an effective 101 with my manager? That's something that you can apply tomorrow. And so having that peer accountability partner empowers you to be able to constantly want to learn and apply that back to the workforce. And then over time, that becomes part of your work behavior. And when it's part of your work behavior, hopefully these good practices then uplift the business. This is something that we're always innovating and iterating on. You know, we care a lot about the efficacy of the learning, but more importantly, the curation of that cohort. Because if you can find another 19 people to be part of your mantra, your network, your accountability partners that you can lean on as you progress in your career, I think that's something that is going to be very powerful. Most people don't get the chance to do so. That's why people pay to go to university. But what we believe is it has to be a people-led experience for it to be impactful.
God, the reason why I stress this accountability part is I'm a big believer in personal development, and this bit is a core part in the personal development. You have to do things before people and with people so that you don't feel alone. You are not just some nerd doing some leadership stuff that no one understands, but everyone understands it. Okay, if I am a student, I want to enroll in the, say, like August 2021st cohort. It is the end of July now. Is there a wait list for the cohorts? If I miss it, is there a wait list for the cohorts that coming after?
Yeah, so we actually run cohorts every 6 weeks. And if the program fills, we will be increasing the number of cohorts. But there's actually two type of models that we work with Aero. One is we work into a company. So we work with organizations that will be sending their managers as part of a private program. And that's a way for them to meet other team members in different functions. Most of the time, these companies never get to interact whether it's a CX team to the sales team to the marketing team. The second is our public cohort, which is allowing individual learners to sign up. That's actually where we see ourselves evolving as a business school. Right now, it's really focusing on the hyper growth teams, but over time, more curriculum, more programs. We're still a very young business and a really young business school, but we do want to build the infrastructure so that you could have the same quality learning experience over time, the same quality instructors over time.
Got it. Ooh, thanks for telling me everything about New Campus. To end with this session, I would like to ask you about a fun fact. I read this from a New Campus Medium article. So you are a trainer of Pokemon Go. Are you a Pokemon Go fan? The reason why I will ask you about this is it is not just a fun fact, but also I just told you know that I have a daughter. I'm not really a fan of Pokemon and Pokemon Go, but I have to collect a bunch of Pikachu for my daughter. That's the reason why I have this game on my mobile. So are you a Pokemon fan?
I am a very big Pokemon fan because I grew up in an era with a lot of Pokemon.
Oh, I know that. Which one is your favorite? Referencing.
I'll tell you that in a second. let's talk about the Pokemon Go piece. That I know the article that you're referencing, that was almost, I think, 18 months ago when it just launched. I think, what is incredibly exciting about Niantic and their, the potential, which I don't think they achieved, is it does, allow people to be inspired to exercise. And even now when the Pokemon Go phase has kind of died out, you still see uncles and aunties walking around the park trying to catch Butterfree's and Pikachu's and Mankey's and whatnot. But why I still love, every facet of my life, there were elements of Pokemon. So I used to trade Pokemon cards as my first business. I used to print it and then sell it for like a dollar to, kids at school. I grew up watching series before going to school. And even now, when you think back about the thesis of Pokemon, it is that journey of exploration, of leveling up, of finding good partners, good friends to help you, defeat the gyms and become the next Pokemon master. But I think that was incredibly important for the millennial generation because it is teaching them about resilience. It is teaching them about, challenging the status quo, being the underdog. my favorite Pokemon, and for those listening, don't, no haters, but it is Bulbasaur. I was always the strange Bulbasaur kid. But yes, I'm a very big fan of the Pokemon series and, even though I haven't sort of kept up with the latest new iterations, it still holds very, truly to my heart and my team's heart as well.
Mm. So you were those people when you traveled to Japan? No, you traveled to Japan on purpose to get that Japan limited edition of whatever Pokemon. You would do that, right? Yeah.
I was too young to buy tickets to get, to those Pokemon convention centers. I know what you're talking about, Aero, but I'm really excited about the gaming and the anime industry because you essentially have this rising pool of millennials who grew up aspiring to be, Ash Ketchums of the world, and now they have capability, they have money. And they also have maturity. And I do think that has really empowered the gaming ecosystem to thrive, which is why esports is so big now. Another conversation of the day, but what I think has, and this is why I'm really excited for the next generation of, Gen Z, your kids and, Gen Alphas, is it's really helping them, have that creativity. I see a lot of, drawings in, your background, it is, giving them that inspiration to lead. It's giving them, the creativity to be entrepreneurial. So these things matter over time.
Actually, let me tell you my hidden agenda about this question, because you are clearly a open-minded people. That's the reason why you are building new campus. And my hidden agenda is I wanna promote the gaming culture. The other day, I just interviewed a PhD people, and he is coming from Korea to demystify the eSport. And he told me there's even a curriculum about eSport in university. So yeah, that's the core reason why I wanna ask you about this question. And the gaming industry, I just grew up like in the Nintendo, PlayStation, Sega, those kind of gaming console. So really, one last question. Why did you say Japan had changed your life, and why is it your favorite travel destination? One last question.
Oh, so you're talking about an article that I wrote.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's always a soft spot for Japan. I studied Japanese for 6 years.
Oh, so you can't speak Japanese?
Not anymore. so don't test me on that. But yeah, I grew up in an age of adolescence. And I think in Australia, there was a lot of sort of, you know, strong relationships between Japan and Australia. I would have international students stay with me, and I would go to Japan and stay with them. So we built really long friendships. One of my best friends is half Japanese, so getting exposure to that culture. And I think, you know, eventually if I retire, I'd love to find a quiet mountain somewhere with, you know, birds chirping in the background, fresh water running, fresh seafood, but highly equipped and capable toilets just a stone throw away. And that's what I love about Japan, is having that accessibility to serenity, but then you have the technology capability there.
Got it. 30 years down the line, you will do that. You're building new campus now, you don't have the time.
Yeah, hopefully closer. But yes, soft spot in my heart.
Got it. So thank you again. Thank you for being on our show. And this is a very enjoyable conversation with you. And let me know more deeply about new campus and you personally as a person.
Thanks for your time, Eric.
Yep.